Barbara Reel 3. This is the beginning of Barbara Reel 3, Channel 1 Right. Channel 1 Right, the beginning of New Reel, Barbara Reel 3. Saturday morning, at noon, Saturday lunch, the 8th of November, 69. These two young writers, Gene Keister and Bea Roberts, came out at 9 and left at 12. Gene's daddy tarried. Overcast. Supposed to be a beautiful day. And this is the Florida Bowl game day. Oh, you know, at Jacksonville? Now, here's a question. Some people, you know, you might just dislike intensely. But Fell doesn't do it. And if he does, you can't tell it. And if he does, he still keeps them in his mythology, in his world, as much as anybody else. And I've heard him talk or tell over and over again those clashes he had with objectionable people up on the campus, officials and people living there and all. Now that's Ms. Tilk and Elaine. Elaine and Ms. Tilk.
Now, I just want the truth about Ms. Tilk.
That's asking rather a lot, isn't it? The truth's so hard to come by. When I first went there, I thought Mrs. Tilt was something out of Dickens' descriptions of England. And only I was Oliver Twist or whatever. So it's fraught with one thing and another, with the rationing of the sugar and the inspections and the hard looks we get when we go up to breakfast sometimes. Felt pretty much like an orphan in what is it, in the poorhouse. And the meals seemed awfully sparse. And you were afraid to ask for seconds. And, of course, what I didn't know then was how much of it was Mrs. Parker.
Oh, yeah.
And she seemed pretty hard. And she seemed to be in such a bad humor all the time. And so, you know, I'd get together, and the more you talk, the worse it seemed.
You talk about her?
Oh, yes.
All of you?
Yes. And Trudy would go into little fits of fury and declare that she never hated anyone so much. Because, you see, Trudy was, since she went out, she was the only one who went out very often. She was the one who quite frequently had to go up to Mrs. Tilk and explain why she had been late coming in. And there was a little session when, this was just before Christmas, I guess. And Trudy was going out with a boy that Mrs. Tilk didn't really approve of. He was a client, but Mrs. Tilt thought might be a bit of a wolf. She didn't really approve of him. She said she didn't think he was quite safe to be with. And so she would watch Trudy pretty closely about what time she got back and things like that. And Trudy got very upset because she thought, as far as she was concerned, Mrs. Tilt was interfering in something that wasn't any of her business. She didn't mind. It wasn't the fact that she was keeping tab of the hours. It was the fact that Mrs. Tilt seemed to feel that she had some idea of what type of boy was right for Trudy to go out with. And Trudy said even her parents didn't do that anymore. her parents would have been set straight when she was 16, and she didn't expect Mrs. Tilk to have to set Mrs. Tilk straight.
How old was she then? 20? Mm-hmm.
So, what with the little things like that, and her telling Sarah that Sarah couldn't even go out but two nights a week because her exam was coming up, you see, and she was going out with a boy, and Mrs. Tilt would give these little lectures about, you came here to take the exam, so be sure you carry it through, and things like that. Of course, they were resented. She seemed to have such a horrible practical view of the whole thing. really. That and the fact that she would keep, every once in a while at breakfast, we'd get a letter from some former student, and that student wouldn't be teaching, you see. They'd be at a training horses or something like that. And Mrs. Tilt would sort of frown and say something about, you know, we don't like for you to leave here and not teach. You've come here to learn, to get an exam as instructresses, and that's what we train here, and we don't like for you to leave and not teach. And of course, all of that would get our backs up right there. It just little things. It kept mounting up. And then she'd come down and inspect the club room, and we'd get a report from Mrs. Parker that she had seen some little spot of dust, and that we were all in the doghouse because the club room was a mess or some such thing. And then after Christmas, it seemed to, the whole atmosphere just changed. And especially during the summer, she was so jolly. And they went up to Scotland on holiday. When they came back, she was talking about Scotland, and she never talked about the actual holiday they'd taken, and she would talk about it, things had happened, but it was more she would remember the holidays before that, when they'd gone up to Scotland, or they'd gone down to someplace, and they don't just go to some holiday spot, they always find some out-of-the-way spot. One year they went to the beach and took two of the horses with them. Mm-hmm. And Judy and Thea would ride the horses on the beach and in the surf. And Mrs. Tilt, you see, this is what you didn't find out till I didn't find out till then. She had this marvelous ability to. When she was talking about her holidays, and she would remember, she would describe the cove where she and Mr. Tilk had had a picnic or something like that, and always there would be some little thing about it that she could bring out that was unusual. She could catch the one little thing in an incident that made it stand out, and it might have been the way a flock of birds flew across the between the sea and the sky, sunset from the ship deck. And she had the most delightful description of a trip she and he had taken to Jura. It was some little island, and the only way you can get there is by ferry. What's worse, they went over in a storm, and the storm kept up all the week they were there, and they had to come back in the storm. And the ship that was supposed to bring them back couldn't get over because of the high water, high waves. And she said they were just on that ship. Neither one of them, fortunately, were seasick, wrong with everybody else was. And the waves were so high that she said the little ship was just, seemed like any moment it would just go under. And she could describe it all so vividly. And then this, I'd never seen in her before. All that winter, it'd been so bleak, and the only thing we'd ever seen was the frown, you know.
Well, that was after Christmas when she made the trip.
She made the trip in the spring. And after Christmas, Mrs. Parker left, you see.
Oh.
And that's when we began to see, we were in contact with them more. We had our lunches up there, and there were all the little things that had to go with it, with arranging for us to manage to keep the place without Mrs. Parker. And she seemed suddenly so generous in what she would do for us. I'm sure it was just seeming. I'm sure she'd always been that way, but it's hard to see sometimes through a veil of lies like Mrs. Parker could put up.
Mm.
And she was still, but then you see, that's when people started noticing how sick she was. And if we go up, and some days she'd be real jolly, and another day she'd be depressed, and they'd say, well, the storm warnings are up, she's feeling bad today. Which is completely different from the storm warnings are up for some unknown reason. And by the end of it, you see, my whole attitude toward her has so completely changed. She could still be maddeningly practical sometimes. And annoyingly motherly. but there was a good humor and goodwill in it, which there hadn't been before.
Well, now, when was it? You all, before Christmas, that was when you took, had all those pranks at her expense.
Most of them, yeah. That, and then there was a series of parties after Christmas, which, all along, even much right up to the end, there was a certain necessity for her not to know how late you got in. Because she would worry. That was the reason toward the end. The beginning, it was because you just didn't want her to know to keep out of, because you wanted to keep out of trouble. And we used to go to the flicks, the movies, with Judy. And somehow or other, even though the movie ended at 10:30, we could never make it back by 11 o'clock. It seemed to be a physical impossibility. I think it was because we always had to have a cup of cocoa, but be that as it may. So we would have to come sneaking back, and we would drive quietly up the drive and quietly down to the club room and keep shades closed. But it never worked. Because Judy would go into the house, and her mother would be awake, waiting for her to come in, and the instructions for those girls when they came in, well, for Judy, when she came, because Judy stayed in the house, she had to stop by her mother's room and say goodnight before she went up to bed, even if the lights were out and it seemed that she was asleep. She was supposed to do this. And by the end of the year, that wasn't enforced anymore. But right then it was, and so Judy would have to, her mother would be awake, and so Judy would have to go in and say goodnight, and that would mean that she knew when time we'd gotten in, and there just weren't any excuses. So one night, we'd been late about three nights that week already, and we couldn't figure out what to do. And Judy can think of things I never would think of. She and Trudy together would invent the wildest schemes. for getting past something. And Judy said about when we got on the stretch of road just before the turnoff, she says, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to turn off the motor and we'll push the car up the drive. And we thought, oh, cool. Well, all right, you know, why not? So she got to she just turned to the drive and then she cut off the motor. She says, well, they'll think it's somebody shifting, changing gears up the road. They won't notice it. And she turned in and switched off the motor. And we pushed the hill, the car up the little hill, up to the drive, and into a parking place approximately where Judy might have parked it if she had driven it up there. And then we went down and shaking in our boots and waiting till the next morning to see what the result would be. And we pulled it off. She didn't know. But
those little cars are not easy to push.
No, they're not. Not even when there are eight of you and it's a little Morris.
Yes. And those little Jeeps in the Army, they are almost impossible to push. You know, the gears are so heavy and they have those four-wheel drives and all. Oh, you just can't push them. But Miss Parker then was the meanie, really?
Miss Parker wouldn't. She's so difficult to catch hold of. You see, because I just don't notice things like this. A lot of what I see through other people. And Mrs. Parker, I really didn't notice that much. The other people would complain about her because she would trap you and just keep talking forever and ever and ever. And she was always on about how fond the other girls in the groups before had been of her and how she would take care of us, and if our rooms weren't quite straight, she'd make up our bed for us and things like that. And she'd trap you and keep you talking forever. I got yelled at by Segan about that once. She had me trapped in a corner and I couldn't get out in time to get my horse ready. But then she was supposed to do the cooking. And not only was she personally not clean, but the kitchen was a mess. And the others complained about it. Now, it just didn't bother me. It doesn't bother me one way or the other. It bothered me when I had to clean it up. But then I just didn't notice. And the others would complain, you know, Susan, I can't stand to get close to her in that basket she carries around, and just to walk through that kitchen makes me sick, and all this sort of stuff. Didn't bother me. So I really didn't notice as much about Mrs. Parker until after she left. And then when she left, we began to find out through Judy and through Mrs. Tilk, by what Mrs. Tilk did and by what Judy said, how much she would lie. Judy said that she used to go up to the house and she would overhear her talking to Mrs. Tilt. And she would tell Mrs. Tilt the most horrible things about us. Well, see, she'd come back down and tell us that she was protecting us from Mrs. Tilt. Sometimes she would get mad at us, and she would, and then she would really be furious. She was one of the kids had knocked over an ashtray. And admittedly, they were not good about cleaning up. If they knocked over an ashtray, they knocked over. Until somebody got up the energy to go over and brush up the ashes and pick up the ashtray, which wasn't them. And they always left it for Mrs. Parker. And so she cornered one of us, not me, I'm glad to say, and told her that we were the worst group of students she had ever seen, that we were treated the place like a public house, like and that we were just nothing but a bunch of dirty pigs.
Now, Miss Parker?
That was Miss Parker.
She's telling you all.
She's telling us all, yeah. And it was really, then she had a real layout with one of the girls. We had a party. No guests, just among ourselves. And two of the girls got really drunk. And Mrs. Parker got, I forget how it went now, but she felt that she was having to clean up after these two girls, that they didn't clean up after themselves. Well, it wasn't true. They just, one of the girls just simply hadn't had a chance to. But she laid into both of them and was tramping up and down and saying, "I won't tell Mrs. Tilt, but this, that, and the other, and you're the Oh, she really tore into Anne. And Anne was the fiery type. If you tore into her, she was just liable to tear back into you. And she did. And they were practically having a screaming fight in the middle of the yard.
Wow.
And Celia had to try and soothe things down. This is one of the things that has always made me respect Celia, is the way she handled that whole affair. But she managed to get Anne off by herself. And she told her that she didn't care how much she drank. If she wanted to drink, that was fine with her. But that Mrs. Parker was right in that she shouldn't have to clean up after her. And she shouldn't inconvenience anybody else. And Anne says, Anne cursed liberally. She said, I was going to clean up after her, but I didn't have time. I was this, that, and the other. And so somehow Celia managed to get around Mrs. Parker, because Mrs. Parker was so mad she was ready to go up to Mrs. Tilk. And we would really, that was at the worst tension time between us and Mrs. Tilk. That would have been it. But really. Somehow or other, you managed to get Mrs. Parker smoothed down. And when she got Mrs. Parker smoothed down and managed to get Anne smoothed down, then she managed to keep them away from each other for the rest of the week, which was probably the best part of the whole thing. But she just, it's created so much tension because she would play one against the other. And then she disappeared.
So she really wasn't there long after you were there?
About 3 months.
But she left her mark.
Oh, she left her mark, all right.
Well, now, you know, if you can be warned and have a sense of humor, it'd be right interesting to watch a person like that.
Well, see, that was part of it. That's one reason I didn't see her at all. I was just sort of interested in her, and I thought she was mildly amusing. But I never saw half of it.
But you see her mostly through the others in retrospect.
See, what I saw of her, what the opinions I formed of her were rather harmless gossip. Not particularly pleasant to be around, but not malicious.
One of those girls.
Yeah, it was one of the girls that was started the course with us. Was going to take the exam sooner than us. It gave me my first brush with that really intense British nationalism. And you know, it sort of hurts when your own attitude towards things is is I'm not patriotic. I'm almost the opposite. And I don't push the fact that I'm American on anybody, and never did while I was over there. Matter of fact, the only way they ever found out if I was American was if they asked me a direct question. But we were watching show jumping, and if an American horse, or well, any horse from any other country, did well, she had no good words for it. And she would talk while you were trying to listen. And if you asked her to be quiet, she would say, "Oh, it doesn't matter. That's just some old American horse." Well, she wouldn't say it like that because that's an American expression. But, and she would really get violent about it. She would get loud and argue with me. I mean, try to argue with me. I didn't say all that much. I just asked her to be quiet, and that was the most I could do. But if, for instance, when Bill Steinkraus was jumping, and I went to see it, and she would spend the whole time talking and running it down so much, I couldn't get any enjoyment out of watching the whole thing with her. And for instance, I think this was the Olympics. Yeah, it was the Olympics. And there were some Australian horses that did beautiful rounds. But if you said anything about it, she would just, you know, start talking, and she would jinx. You know how you get a group for a television set, and they say the opponent comes on, and they start a jinx. For instance, the horse is going to hit the next one. He's going to hit the next one. He's going to hit the next one until the whole round's over. And she would do this throughout almost anything except the British rounds. And it carried over, of course, into things other than horses and show jumping. But it was my first brush with it, and it was most unpleasant.
You had to live with it?
Yeah, I suppose. I got so that I'd try to avoid anything that would bring it up.
Well, that's like...
Now, that was at noon on Saturday the 8th of November, 69, at lunch. Saturday, November 8th, November 69, at lunch. Faye was in Tampa with Alan to play the concerto. And his mama gave him so many sleeping pills, tranquilizers. He couldn't stay awake that afternoon and take his test. Now, this is not the original view of Ms. Tilk. The first one that we haven't been able to recapture was a rather merry account of all the deceptions that the girls had of to get in at night and not let Miss Tilk know they were late. And some more. This is Channel 1 Right, 3:30. Channel 1 Right, 3:30. This is Sunday at breakfast, 9th of November, 69. Sunday at breakfast, 9th of November, 69. Well, how was your little horse this morning?
Well, you all reported she had sand colic last night. I surely couldn't tell it this morning. When I got down there, she had her head in Molly's stall. All the other horses were standing way back. And I got her back out of Molly's stall. And she proceeded to go right into Pooh's stall all the way up. I used right strong language with her, and she ducked her head. So I had to take a crop. I waved it around in front of her and asked her what in the world was into her this morning. And she finally got back, but I had to get her all the way back, I mean completely out, not only the stall, but out of the whole area, and before she'd go in her own stall. And her ears were cocked, and her eyes were bright, and she was just princess again.
Barbara, I just want to know now how you treat a horse with a colic.
Oh, dump him off a ditch. And I don't get on him and ride him. And I don't walk him. So apparently I do everything wrong.
You even let the horse lie down.
I even let the horse lie down and roll.
And roll, see?
Can't believe it.
Well. No, I might have been a bit more active about keeping her up if she had been worse. But she wasn't bad. She was just, to lie down and roll was about the most she would do. I mean, she wasn't sweating, she wasn't kicking in her stomach or anything. And she hardly making any noise when she was lying down, so she wasn't bad off. And so I just brought her up, let her stare at me a while.
Then how did that start? Yeah, I was sitting out there with Cookie, and I said, oh, Missus is doing fine.
Yeah, that'd be about the time that Frank went... I got up to you and said that I was going to get her, I guess. I'd noticed she was lying down before my lesson, but she'd lay down and roll, and then she got right up, and I figured that's why she lay down. I mean, you know, just to have a roll. And then I noticed she was lying down after my lesson. I said something about it to Frank, and I turned my... She got up, and we talked on a minute, and I looked at her, she's lying down again. So I said, well, I'm just going to go get her, Frank. And that must he went off toward y'all. And I went out to get her. And she was lying there with her. The minute I walked up, she started going,
ooh. Oh, she did?
Yeah.
Yeah, I told you.
Yes, I believe you. I believe you. When she started just crying.
Now, what is that argument for? What'd you tell her?
I told her that when Missy knew she... was going to get some attention, she played it up.
Well, I'm afraid she didn't get any sympathy from me. That was how I treated her. I was just horrible. I got up there, and she was doing this, and I said, all right, silly horse, get up. And she looked at me. She just looked at me. Like, what do you think you're doing?
Don't you know I'm sick?
Don't you know I'm sick? Yeah. And so I got her up and led her up. And by that time, Guy and Cookie were standing by the fence. And got up there and Cookie said, what's wrong with your horse, Barbara? She's got a little bellyache. She said, yeah, looks like it. And he said, well, you know what's good for that? No, Cookie, what's good for it? And he said, well, just get on them and ride them, walk them.
Yeah, I remember he said, don't walk them around there and wear yourself out, just get on
and ride her. And I said, well, you know, Cookie, I just might do that, but she's had this other thing, this lung thing, and I don't think I can do that to her. He says, well, I tell you what my granddad used to do. What? He says, he used to jump a horse. And he'd take him out and jump him off a bank or jump him off a ditch, make him jump. Those horses, you'd do that with them once and you'd take them back to the stable and put them in the stall and they'd be fine.
Forget about them.
Yeah. She said, you wouldn't hear another thing for the rest of the night. I said, well, I just don't think I've got anything to jump her off of. And so I just started standing there with this silly horse. I tried to get her to walk around me. I wasn't going to walk with her. It's too lazy. And I was trying to get her to walk around me, and she wasn't having too much of that. She'd walk a little bit, and then she'd stop and flick her ear at me.
Put her on a lunge line.
That's what, yeah, Cookie said, put her on a lunge line and crack a whip behind her, and she'll go. So Frank brought me the whip so that I could keep her going. But Then we decided, I asked if you had a drench here. And he just says, well, I don't know, go look.
Great help.
I don't know what that goes to that horse, and I don't give a damn.
Oh, really?
And Cookie just laughed and laughed and laughed. He Fine. Thought that was the funniest thing he'd heard in the 80s.
Fine friend I've got. You just wait till one of his cows gets sick. <He's not here. laughs>
So Cookie said, well, Frank, you go out and walk that horse while she goes and gets this stuff. So Frank went out and walked Missy. And I came up and found the mineral oil and scouted around for a long neck bottle and couldn't find one. And there wasn't any paregoric that I knew of. So I was told to go to the drugstore and get some paregoric and a half quart of Coca-Cola. So I went. And when I came back, I mixed the stuff up and took it out there. And Frank held Missy's head up while we got this stuff down her and all over
Frank
us. Oh, yeah, Frank helped me. He'd stand under there and brace his shoulder under her head. If she'd been any taller, we never would have managed it. He'd brace his shoulder under her head and hold her head up while I let her drink this stuff. And the first, she was so funny. I stuck it in her mouth, and we got her head up, and she glugged down about a third of it before she realized what was happening. A third of the bottle of this stuff gone without spilling any, you know, and I thought, well, we're doing great. And then she started got the taste of it, and she started using her tongue to slurp it out. And from then on, we were just fighting her, fighting the drip, fighting everything else. And she would get it up there, and she would sound like she was swallowing, she'd look like she was swallowing, but the level in that bottle would not change.
Know what you mean.
Just stay there. But we finally got all of it out of the bottle. I don't know how much of it she drank.
Now that's in the dark.
Yeah. Well, it was in the dusk. I could see the bottle well
enough. Don't tell me it's in the dusk, it's dark.
All right. Dark. I could see what was in the bottle.
I couldn't see you out there.
Well, she never gets sick at a proper time.
I see. She waited until the vets went home.
Yeah.
She almost waited until the drugstore closed.
Yeah, usually
she
does.
Just lacked half an hour. Well, of course, she'd been sick that afternoon.
Yeah.
And she waited until you went off visiting. And it, before the molasses season come in, there wasn't any molasses to give her. And this green grass season, when you figure that she don't get any sand.
Yeah. Even worse than that was when I went out to check on her last night. And I thought I heard them over in the indigo. So I went over there. And I must have walked right past them.
And they wouldn't speak.
And they didn't speak. And I couldn't see Pussy's white rump. And that's what I was looking for. And I didn't see Pussy's white rump. And I just wandered on up, all the way up to the lane, and all the way across that middle field. And I walked over and said hello to the calves. And they stared at me. And I walked back to the gap and through the front field again. And walked over into the indigo again and decided, well, I'll get the lights from the houses behind me this time. So I walked on down, and sure enough, back right where I swear I had walked before, I could see Pussy's white rump.
Your light blinded
you. Yeah, I think the light was from the houses. I couldn't see into it.
I've tried my best to get them to put a shield over them lights so they won't blind me. They got no conception that one little naked light bulb on the porch down there blinds me clear back here to this corral.
Yeah.
Yeah.
True, huh? For all that, I got up to her and she was grazing just as peacefully and contentedly as if she'd never been sick a day in her life. All that wandering around in the dark.
Ivo, what would you consider a fair dose of paregoric for a horse with colic?
Well, I didn't know how to judge it except by weight. And the little thing on the bottle said a teaspoon to an adult. And I figure an adult human weighs, they can't prescribe it on the assumption that the adult is any certain weight. And adults weigh anything from 90 to 350 pounds. So I figured 200 pounds average and gave her accordingly. I had to guess at her weight too, of course.
Yeah. Well, now some people are sensitive to paregoric and some wouldn't be. Some, whether they're little or small.
Yeah. I figured I couldn't overdose her because she'd probably lose half of it anyway.
Yeah.
Dribbled it all over us. Morning, I obviously didn't. She's wide awake.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
She was wide awake last night when I went to see her.
How much of this colic have you had to put up with?
A lot. Not a lot. There's a horse up North Carolina that had a case about as bad as Missy's. And we spent 2 hours walking it and just about walked him out of it when the vet got there. He hated vets. Just the smell of a vet in the vicinity, and that horse was on his hind legs.
Mm-hmm.
He just hated them. So we had to fight him all down the passageway to get the shot in him that was the tranquilizer. And then about 2 seconds after that shot was in him, he was just standing there, his head down, his feet rattled, completely out, zonked.
Maybe the vet hated horses.
I don't know. No, he recovered very nicely. But the vet bill was $15, and I got yelled at for forgetting the vet for that horse. Because he wasn't that sick. He didn't have the colic that bad. And I was really given what for it. And I saw a couple of cases while I was in England, and they were both bad. One of them was an old horse who, she got it and was really, really kicking her stomach and everything. And they brought her into the school and drenched her. And then they just turned her loose in the school when she promptly dropped down and collapsed. Just lay there. She didn't roll or anything. She just lay there. And she stayed like that for 2 hours, I think, before she decided to get up. In the meantime, we had a lesson in there. And if there's anything a horse hates, it's a sick horse.
Mm-hmm.
It makes him so nervous. And we had some young horses in there in that lesson. It was a student lesson. We were riding. We were riding in and around, you know, just around this horse, and those young horses would stop and snort and then leap forward when they get close to her. And she just lay there and groaned. It was the worst lesson I think I've ever been in. It was just because it was the first time I'd seen a horse like that. And then after about an hour and a half, I think, she got up and shook herself, and it was over. She was all right. And then about a couple months later, we had another horse who had an attack of colic that was about the same. She wasn't down as long. But they just let them, once they've drenched them, they just let them lie down if they want to.
Oh.
And
but they've drenched them.
Yeah, they drench them first, and then they let them lie down if they want to.
Well, Dr. Holland does that, but he says he's seen too many horses die with colic. So when the first time I called him about Missy, he said, keep her moving until I get there. Mm-hmm. And that was at night. And he came and he drenched her, gave her shots, and he said, now she can lie down all she wants to now. Mm-hmm. What sort of frightened us was that he himself said, you never want to neglect the colic. Now, it may be just because we're in Florida and there's sand. But he said, more horses die in down here with colic than anything else.
Yeah.
Okay.
Remember, this person who lived up there by Betty, who was taking care of these Arabian horses, this very, very, fine Arabian mare, she got sand colic and died. And, oh, she was very valuable. And this girl didn't know whether or not she's going to get sued. She called the vet, but he didn't get there in time. And that was just a few years ago.
I've always heard that you should always have a good colic drench handy. Just right where you can lay your hands on it fast.
Now, that's it.
Always. And that's not just in Florida. That's anywhere. Because mm-hmm. there's so many things that happen. Now, when he said that his daddy used to jump a horse off a bank, I can see how that might work. I don't think it worked for sand colic, though. But you see, you get colic. Colic can be caused by all sorts of things. The list of things that cause colic is long.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the things are some like blocked food in the intestine. And I can see that maybe jumping a horse and that sudden jolt might free that. And that would be it. And he wouldn't have any more trouble. But I don't think that'd work for sand colic. You see? There's so many things. You see, we had a horse in that I wasn't there. I had to go away for a weekend. Mrs. Daly went up to Virginia, and she left me. I was 16 then. She left me and another girl, 14, in charge of that stable while she went. And I had to go away for a weekend. And so for a couple of days, there was just this other girl. Her name was Barbara, too. And she was the only one that was, she would just come out and feed and ride a little if she wanted to and then go home. She lived in the neighborhood. And she came out one morning and found a horse half dead. It looked like colic. I mean, by the time she got there, the horse was lying down, just not even moving. She was just breathing hard. And she called the vet, and what had happened, the horse had gotten to sour feed. And if the vet had gotten there just a little bit later, that horse would have been dead. And that would have been real trouble, because that wasn't Mrs. Daly's horse. That belonged to a woman up in Virginia.
Got into feed?
It got into some, there had been some, some horse had been fed in one of the stalls that wasn't being used. And hadn't finished its feed and had left it. It's a sweet feed. They had a mixed, it was oats and pellets and half of this sweet feed, like you feed, that has molasses in it. Only this had a lot more, the stuff we use had a lot more molasses in it than this stuff. And so it had soured. And then and nobody cleaned it out. Didn't realize it was there. But that door had always been kept closed. And somehow it had been left open, and this horse was turned out in the stable yard during the night. And she had gotten back in there and eaten that feed, and it nearly killed her.
Sometimes they tell, the vet told us, or whether Johnny, I guess it was Johnny that kept telling me, that we had to be careful about too much of this sweet seed. That in some horses it would pack. That was the only trouble. And usually we mix it with just crimped oats, remember? And we've been feeding Missy pretty heavily on just that sweet seed. That could be it.
Oh, yeah.
It could be. I don't know. It might have helped.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now, this is just sort of rambling at breakfast this Sunday morning when the fog is too thick to go out, really. If it's not mean enough, we'll do it again.
What?
First day, Barbara rode Molly. And I was on Pussy. And Barbara had a Western saddle on her. We were going down the lane, and I said, I like to ride Molly, but just in a kind of that foxtrot she did. I never loped her because she was so rough. Barbara didn't say anything, but when she came back, she had a certain look on her face.
You did.
Yeah. Okay, riding in that Western saddle, I couldn't have stood her lope very long. That was something. I felt like I was sitting on two stilts that were jumping up and down, sitting right on top of them. And I didn't say anything to you then because I was trying to figure out whether I was just, you know, whether she was just rough or whether I was, or whether, and what was making her rough.
Or you just prejudiced.
Well, maybe. But I was trying to see. You know, I thought maybe. I run into some rough horses, but it's usually when they carry all their weight on their front feet.
Go ahead.
Or you remember, Barbara, we had talked her up so much about how Nick rode her and rode her so well.
Yeah.
That you were a little apprehensive.
I was a bit scared. I got on her and wasn't quite sure what I was going to do with her. And I hadn't ridden Western before, and she wasn't in the mood to walk, and I wasn't sure what was coming off.
Yeah. You don't like to walk?
Ooh, she likes to move. She doesn't like to walk. She'd love to run, but it sure wasn't comfortable. And I thought, well, you know, the first time Faye and I were talking about it first, like I said, I thought she was maybe going on her forehand. And then I cantered her again. And I decided, well, she's not going on her forehand. She's getting her hind legs under her. It's just because I'm sitting on top of them.
But you didn't say anything.
And when we got back for supper that, was it that night?
Next
morning? Did I ride her? I can't remember whether I rode her in Western or English. I put an English saddle on her.
You didn't put anything on her. And you came up to me in a kind of apologetic manner, as if you didn't know whether you should ask me or not. I never shall forget that voice. And you said, "Say, do you mind if I try an English saddle on?"
Yeah, I guess that's the way it was. I don't remember that at all.
I do.
Doesn't even come to me.
Never forget that.
So she said she didn't mind. I think it's, well, you know, a horse has always been ridden Western. You sort of figure that's the way it ought to be. But I came up here and got that big saddle, put it on her, and I took her out there, and I thought I'd see what I could try, see if my suspicions of the night before were right. And we tried around a little bit, and I put her into a canter, and I was sitting up just practically on her shoulders, and it was nice. It wasn't bad.
What do you mean it wasn't bad? You were on the top of this mound out here, and your daddy and mother and I were standing at the fence, and we heard this squeal. And we heard you say, "It's beautiful. It's beautiful." What do you mean you didn't mind?
Well, I didn't figure I'd scream into the mic. You know? It's just that English saddle, it just changes her whole way it feels. I just wish I could find an English saddle that didn't put me so far on the shoulders that I felt like I was going to go over her head. You can overdo these things.
Now, see, Barbara told this right well to start with, but now she just dropped this from her repertory altogether.
Yeah.
You tell it what you know about it.
Well, this was the first day that Barbara had been on Molly. I guess it was the second day you were here. And she had heard us talk a good bit about Nick, how he felt about Molly, and how beautiful he looked sitting on Molly. And I remember saying that Nick rode with his feet straight out. And Barbara said that she had not ridden Weston very much. I told her I didn't know much about Weston. I just watched Nick. And he sat high in the saddle, far back, with his feet straight out. And he said, "Don't touch her sides." And I could see him now, I told Barbara, just beautiful on that horse. And I really built Nick up. So Barbara got on Molly, and as we went down the lane, I said, "But now I ride Molly, but I don't do anything, I don't lope her, because she's rough. But Nick says she's not. But she is for me. I guess I just can't ride like Nick." So I saw Barbara sort of straightening her legs out a little bit and trying to sit high in the saddle a little bit. We went down the lane and she loped Molly. She didn't say anything much. And coming on back, she had that sort of funny look on her face. And she admitted that it was a little rough. And I had a feeling that Barbara had a feeling that it's just because she couldn't ride like Nick. And that was my personal feeling. And she tried. And we came on up. And she didn't say anything. She didn't say anything else about Molly, as I remember. But also, as I remember, we kept talking about Nick. And how much Nick just loved that horse and kept that horse's picture on his bureau and thought there was nothing like Molly. I remember the next morning.
And wrote Molly letters.
Wrote Molly letters all the time. Next morning, we had a letter from Nick. I had a call from Nick. That was it. When I came in from town that night at the supper table, I said, "Guess what? Nick's coming this weekend, maybe." Well, I thought Barbara looked a little longer faced than usual. But the next morning, she got out there, and Jack and Bertie were standing by the fence. And Barbara was going out to ride Molly. And I thought, you know, how Barbara walks a little bit and sort of stops and looks back at you. And she took another step as if she wasn't sure. Now, this was really the truth. And finally, she turned and came to me and said, she sort of hesitated, and she said, "Do you mind if I put an English saddle on her?" Now, I had said over and over and over how Nick hated an English saddle. He couldn't stand Missy because he couldn't stand that up and down business. And at Swanee, that's the only way they rode, that up and down business. And he wanted to take a Western saddle back to Swanee, the worst in the world, because he said nobody up there had seen a Western saddle. And I could tell that Barbara knew that this was just pure heresy to put an English saddle on Nick's horse. It was in the back of her mind. But she had to try that English saddle. And I said, "Barbara, you can do what you want to with that horse." And she got Mrs. Saddle, put it on Molly, got on Molly. Jack and Bertie and I, and I believe Guy was in the house, we were standing out there by the fence. And Barbara went out in this first pasture, started her in a lope around up there on the brow of the little rise. And we heard this squeal. It wasn't just a little squeal. It was a pretty good squeal. And Barbara was just patting Molly on the shoulder and said, "Why, you're beautiful. You're beautiful." And the lope was just as smooth. And that English saddle had put her up on her forelegs. And Barbara had figured out why she was rough. She's riding over those two legs, stiff legs on the back. But Nick, is long and tall and could brace himself, and he could ride high on that saddle, you see, in a manner that a short little person couldn't do. So he didn't feel that. He doesn't feel that as you would feel. But she came back and then just grabbed her sides almost and said, "But what will Nick say?"
Well, you know, Faye, I don't think I knew about that Nick was coming when I put that English saddle on it, because I don't think I would have done it if I'd known he was coming. It's just, when I'm riding a horse, I don't like somebody fooling around with it. That just really tears me up. And if I thought Nick was coming and was going to come down that weekend and see me riding Molly in an English saddle, I don't think I could have had the heart to do it. When you spend a lot of time on a horse, and you worked it, and you sent it love letters and things like that, you just don't want the idea of somebody else getting on that horse and changing it. Because, see, once I put that English saddle on Molly, I started using the rein aids. I stopped neck reining her and started bidding her. And using the rein aids like you would on a English horse. And I also kept my legs against her sides. And rode her with this leg curved around against her side. She didn't do anything. She didn't go galloping off like she was supposed to. But, hey, see, that just changes her whole way of going. Changes a whole lot about her. She doesn't rush off, and she doesn't, she fools around with that bit a bit, but she doesn't throw her head around, and she does her turns without throwing her head. And a lot of good things to be said in favor of it, rather than a Western curve where she does. Because I can see it in the pictures with Nick. She does. Even so, I don't think he'd appreciate it.
You see, here we are at the end of the reel, and the evil had just come out. The malice. I'd say now deception, just violating the principles of horsemanship, interfering with somebody else's system of handling a horse. Now, I still think Barbara ought to put this into her repertory. It's just too good to let it go. Now that's the end of Channel One Right, and of our talk at breakfast, after breakfast, on Sunday the 8th of November 69. This is the end of Channel One Right, and of our talk at breakfast on Sunday, the 8th of November, 69.